So I wanted to go more deeply. I mentioned in the morning that I was just going to touch on some of the places that we would see today and discuss more elaborately later. So one of those elaborations is Ram's concern that he had killed Vibhishan, he had killed Ravana, who was a Brahmana. Now, what kind of a Brahmana was Ravana? So, the history found in Ramayana is that Ravana was the son of Rishrava. Rishrava was the son of Pulashcha. And Pulashcha, don't put your finger in your mouth. Pulashcha was one of the 10 direct sons of Lord Brahma. So going to the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. The process of creation is described by Maitreya to Vidura. Vidura has heard Krishna speak Uddhava Gita. Maitreya was told by Krishna, very soon Vidura is going to come, and I would like you to instruct him thoroughly, as you have heard. Shortly later, after Krishna departed from this world, Vidura came under the direction of Uddhava. After some discussion between the two, Vidura was directed to Maitreya, and Maitreya inquired. Vidura inquired from Maitreya about many things, but he started with the process of creation. So in the process of creation, this is one of the principal, 10 principal topics in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, so it covers many chapters. What Lord Vishnu does in the process of creation, what Brahma does in the process of creation are described, Sarga and Visarga. So after Brahma creates the universe, he's not finished yet. He has to populate the place that he has created. So to populate, he generates living entities from his own body. He's very powerful. So he generates the 4 Kumaras, requests them to assist him to populate the universe. They say, "No thanks, Dad. We like the Brahmacharya Ashram very much." So that didn't work. He becomes angry. Lord Shiva is created, who expands into 11 Rudras, and they start tearing up the universe even before there's people to populate it. He requests them to then do penance. Go to Mahakalapur and just meditate and be peaceful. He instructs them through the original Lord Shiva that comes from him, and they follow his instruction. And the very next verse describes Brahma's then creating 10 sons. Brahma, who was empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thought of generating living entities and begot 10 sons for the extension of the generations. Here's their names, here's the 10. Count on your fingers. Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulascha, Pulaha, that's 5. Kratu, Brigu, Vashishta, Daksha, and the 10th was da 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 Narada. And actually then later it says there's number 11, Kardama Muni. So Pulascha Muni was what's that? Pulascha Muni was one of the original 10 sons, direct sons of Lord Brahma, who were intended to be prajapatis, or progenitors of mankind, filling up the universe with living entities. And Pulascha is counted amongst another group, the Sapta Rishis, the 7 great rishis. And Pulascha had a son named Vishrava, who was a very qualified brahmana. Pulascha was a brahmana. Vishrava was a brahmana. And then over here on this side is the Daitya dynasty. Diti was one of the queens, or excuse me, one of the wives of Kasyapa. Kasyapa. So, that's a long... So, the king of the Daityas at that time, his name was Sumali, king of the Daityas. And he had a very qualified daughter whose name was Kaikeshi. And Kaikeshi, he wanted nothing but the best for Kaikeshi. So he searched this way, that way, this way, that way. And he ended up selecting, preferring Vishrava as the husband of his daughter Kaikeshi. Already, Vishrava, because he's of this line that have the duty of producing good praja, he already had a queen, or a wife, and from his wife, Kuvera, was his son. So, Vishrava had, with his marriage with Kaikeshi, he had a number of sons. Now, because his wife was from the Daitya side and Kshatriya Daitya side, the sons, according to qualification, could be considered Brahmana or Kshatriya. So Ravana started off as a Brahmana. He was amongst his brothers and sisters. He was particularly skilled in studying scripture. It is said that although Vishrava saw him, his son, as bullish and belligerent and arrogant, that's not a Brahminical qualification, but he was very expert at study. So assiduously he trained him, and Ravana was very learned in scripture. He knew what was dharma and adharma and so forth and so on. He was learned in the scripture. But he had this other daitya side to him, really strong, big time. And after some time he decided he wanted to become really powerful. In fact, he wanted to become immortal. So he went by the Narmada River and engaged himself in very severe austerities. I mean, so severe in worshipping of Lord Shiva that we know from Vrikasura, he would cut off pieces of flesh and offer into the fire to Lord Shiva. And finally, he was going to cut off his head to offer into the fire to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva said, "You don't need to do that. I'm Asutosh. I'm easily pleased." Ravana went further than that. He cut off his head. 10 times he cut off his head, and another head grew back. 10 times. Yeah, that's how he got his 10 heads. And Lord Shiva appeared and said, "My goodness, what do you want?" "I want immortality." "No deal. No immortality for you." So he then requested celestial nectar that would give him near immortality. It didn't work out that way in the long run. But that nectar of immortality was placed in a certain part of his body, which his brother Vibhishan knew, and which Vibhishan disclosed to Ram when Ram is engaged in battle with Ravan. Every time he shot off his head, another head would grow. He shot off his arm, another arm would grow. He had this gift. So he asked, Ram asked Vibhishan how to kill him. That immortality stored there, just like Pirsit, when it all leaks out, he's finished. From his mother's side, from Ravana's mother's side, his mother's Kaikeshi had 2 brothers. So Somali is the grandfather, and then on his maternal grandfather, from his mother's side, she had 2 brothers, Marichi and Subahu. Ram meets Marichi and Subahu when he's just a young man. But that's how Marichi gets connected to Ravana, from his mother's brother, his uncle, Uncle Marichi. And those of you that were with us in Vrindavan, some of you were with us in Vrindavan, one of the places that we went to was Madhuvan, one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Remember, we went up the hill to Dhruvatila, where Dhruva did his meditation on Dhruvatila under the indication of Narada Muni. When we came down the hill, we also visited the temple of Shatrughna. Remember that? And Shatrughna was one of the 4 brothers, Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna. Shatrughna was the one who killed Lavanasura. Lavanasura's mother was Ravana's sister. They had bad genes, that family. Suparnaka was one of his sisters. But the other sister, her name was Kumbhini. And Kumbhini was married to Madhu. If you remember from visiting Vrindavan, Madhu was from the Daitya dynasty, but he was not like them. He was more like Prahlad in Bali. He was very gentle. He made friendships with the devas. He didn't fight against the devas. The Daityas like doing that. He didn't do that. In fact, he was had such a close relationship with Lord Shiva that Lord Shiva gave him an expansion of his trident, a very powerful weapon to be used in defense anytime anyone came. Whole entire armies could be burned to ashes just in a moment, and the trident would come back by his side. Madhu, he was like invincible. But his wicked son Lavanasura was too much. Anyway, rather than retelling that whole Vrindavan Leela, Shatrughna killed Lavanasura, who was the daughter of one of Ravana's sisters. Excuse me, the son of one of Ravana's sisters. And so, obviously, Ravana abandoned his Brahminical side and he took up the Kshatriya side. He was like too ambitious, too cruel. After he had done his scriptural studies and he did this like super austerity program, he set his eyes on Lanka, because Lanka was the gift of residence for his half-brother or step-brother, that is Kubera. They had two different mothers but the same father, Vishrava. So Kubera was the whole of Lanka was created for him by Vishvakarma, and that was his home. And Kubera was very generous with his family members, including Ravana. But Ravana didn't want just like, you know, kindness from Kubera. He wanted Lanka. He wanted the whole thing. And although the intimation was he had a friendly relationship, when it really came down to I want what I want, Vishrava advised Kubera, just let him have it. Just step away, because he has these boons. He's indefeatable. So don't pick a fight with somebody that's indefeatable. Just give him. Later on, Kuvera was situated in the heavenly regions, and Ravana went and had a big battle with Kuvera. And one of his brothers, Prahasta, defeated the chief general of Kuvera, and Ravana defeated Kuvera. He was a bully. He was mean. Big time. So when he was killed by Ram, all the devas were very happy. Everyone was very happy. Well, almost everyone was very happy. And then Lord Ramachandra was... His nature is... It was appreciated by Sugriva. Your nature is you're just concerned about the happiness and welfare and well-being of others. You never think of yourself. you're always thinking of the welfare and happiness and well-being of others. You're just like that. You're not concerned for your own protection, your own safety, your own well-being. You're just concerned for the happiness and welfare of others. The ideal king. So after killing Ravana, a vow that he had taken that he would not return to Ayodhya until that was accomplished, and that he would redeem Sita, and that was accomplished. So he's ready to return back to Ayodhya. The Pushpaka Vimana is arranged. All the assembled Vanaras climb on board. Millions. And then, as we heard, he begins his journey heading in a northerly direction back to Ayodhya. And as he's passing over different places, he's describing to Sita the scenes of the battle and different events that took place and everything. And here in this part of the southern tip of India, at Ramapada, he brought his Vimana down to show Sita everything. And who should be there but Agastya Muni? In one of the paintings that we saw, I've not heard him described this way, but he looks like very, very short. Have you heard that description specifically, that Agastya Muni was very short? I mean, like really short, like a midget, really short, but vastly learned and extremely powerful. And the exchange is very beautiful. The Srimad Bhagavatam exchange that resembles this exchange is when Swayambhuva Manu meets Kardama Muni. It's in the third canto. Prabhupada calls this Brahma Karya. Now in the exchange, Agastya is a Brahmana. Ram is a Kshatriya. The first person to speak would normally be the Kshatriya honoring the Brahmana, but in this case, Agastya speaks praise and appreciation of Lord Ramachandra. Because Ramachandra is just arriving and Agastya is like the resident. So he just starts extolling the great accomplishments and quality of Ramachandra. O Rama, you have appeared to reestablish religious principles and annihilate the demons. Bhagavad Gita, right? Pratanaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam. Just by the touch of your lotus feet, the dust of your lotus feet, you delivered Ahalya. You protected the Yajna of Vishwamitra Muni. You broke the very powerful bow of Lord Shiva. You left for the forest just under the indication of your father for 14 years. You gave your mercy to Jatayu. You destroyed Kabanda, Tataka, Maricha, and Vali. You built the Setu Bridge. You destroyed Ravana. Your lotus feet are worshipped by great stately persons like Shabari. You were even victorious against Lord Parashuram. Your kindness and your power are unlimited. Please bestow that kindness and unlimited mercy upon us, the sages who have come to greet you. Very beautiful. The Brahmana is respecting the Kshatriya. Now the Kshatriya is going to respect the Brahmana. It's a mix. He's describing his position as God, but he's also saying that the Brahmanas are most dear to me. No one is as dear to me as the Brahmanas. Oh, Agastya, you have rightly spoken. All living entities become purified by approaching me. He's stating his supremacy. Anyone who takes my darshan gets liberation. You all stand in the path of self-realization and possess all brahminical qualities: mercy, peacefulness, celibacy, control of the mind and senses. I offer my obeisances unto you. I give my heart to the brahmanas such as you. Now I place before you a concern. I've killed Ravana, who is the grandson of Brahma. He's the great grandson of Brahma. What can I do to relieve myself of this sin for killing a Brahmana? He is the upholder of Dharma. And so he's asking the Brahmanas how to maintain proper Dharmic principle. So Agastya makes a suggestion. He's not like instructing, he's suggesting. Our suggestion is that you install a Shiva Linga right here at this Gandhamanana mountain, and one who worships very nicely the Shiva Linga, all their sins will be destroyed. And you do like this, and from this day forward the linga will be known as Rama Linga. That is our suggestion. Ram was very pleased with Agastya Muni's recommendation. So he began two things. He began meditating upon Lord Shiva, and he gave some service to his dear devotee Hanuman. Go to Kailash, request of Lord Shiva directly for Shiva Linga, and bring quickly what is Hanuman like other than service? Nothing. There goes Hanuman, soaring into the air with a tall, long leap, heading for Kailash. Unfortunately, when he got there, Lord Shiva was in meditation. He couldn't knock on his door or send him a text message or ring his doorbell or something. So he sat in meditation, waiting for Lord Shiva to complete his meditation. Meanwhile, back here, Agastya Muni is doing his calculation, saying that the auspicious time for this worship of Lord Shiva, of Shiva Linga, is passing, and Hanuman hasn't come. So Ram requested Sita, using just her hands and sand, to fashion a Shiva Linga, which they could, right on the seashore, begin to worship. And Agastya Muni approved. And with the help of Lakshman, all the necessary paraphernalia for worship was created. Ram, using his kodi — what does kodi mean? Dhanush kodi. Kodi means the tip of his bow. I'm getting educated from. With the tip of his bow, Just like Krishna made a kund using his flute, so Ram made a kund using his tip of his bow. And water came, and water from Kodi Tirtha was used for the Abhishek along with other auspicious articles. And when that worship of the Shivalinga was being performed, Lord Shiva himself came. He appeared out of the Linga along with his consort. And a little conversation took place between Ram and Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was so pleased. Anyone who performs this worship will become freed from all qualities of sins and takes bath at Dhanushkoti. All spiritual and material benefits will come. So that was very nice. The purpose that Ram had was fulfilled. But Hanuman came just after the whole ceremony was finished. He who simply loves service was late. And although volumes and volumes and volumes of service Hanuman had done, here's one where he felt he failed. I'll become known as the person who was unable to carry out the order of his master. All my efforts are useless. I'm useless. And he just fell at Ram's feet crying, weeping and sobbing. He was so sincere in carrying out his service. So there's a very nice discussion, very valuable discussion. Anybody that has to extend devotee care to other devotees should listen very carefully to this, because it's very useful, it's very instructive. Three parts of this nice discussion. O Hanuman, I understand everything, and there is nothing I don't know. No, you don't need to say that when you're giving counsel to somebody, but Ram can say that. The successes and failures of life depend upon past karma. Happiness and distress in this world are because of our past activities. Don't be upset by the apparent failures in life. Please control your mind and senses. Don't be attached to your own ego. Now, some people can't take talk like that, but Hanuman can. The next section is he just describes the temporary nature of everything in this world, and it's really beautiful. This body is temporary. Even if the body is anointed with chandan, camphor, and kasturi, and other fragrant items, still the body by nature smells bad. Even sweet items such as sugar and honey and fruits that go inside this body transform into obnoxious stool. He's not painting a pretty picture. Sweet waters such as milk and coconut water, after going through our body, come out as obnoxious salty urine. The pure white cloth, when worn by the body, becomes dirty. Therefore, those who are elevated souls do not get carried away by the apparent miseries and pleasures pertaining to the body. This body is nothing but a deep, dark well. The ripened fruit automatically falls to the ground. This body also, in the same way, falls. Just like today is gone, tomorrow will also be gone. just like this month has finished, the coming month will also become finished. Death is certain, and activities and pleasures pertaining to the body also finish in due course of time. Hanuma, don't be attached to the temporary, because it's temporary. Don't get carried away with the thoughts of I and mine. Don't get carried away with the false ego and the sense of being the doer. It's like, so that's the admonishment part. Now he says, here's why I did what I did. I installed this Shivalinga because the time was past. I had to do. So it wasn't some neglect of you, it was just circumstance. Now you've done a very nice service. I've requested of you to bring Shivalinga. You brought Shivalinga. So you're very concerned that your Shivalinga should be worshipped? Very well. This Shivalinga here, I invite you, try to move it. It's rooted down to Patala Loka. I don't think you're going to be able to move it. But if you can move it, we'll just place your Shivalinga there and we'll do the ceremony here. So Hanuman, capable of lifting mountains and carrying mountains in the air and all those things, his immeasurable strength, he wrapped his tail around the Shivalinga and started pulling. It didn't move. He made his body bigger and bigger. Wouldn't move. He fell to the ground in total unhappiness. He had failed again. He was practically unconscious. So Ram spoke to him again in a different way. Sometimes when you're counseling people, you have to speak in this way. Very nice. Ram took Hanuman on his lap. Oh Hanuman, because of you, I got the friendship of Sugriva. For my sake, you crossed the ocean. And for my sake, you went and found the whereabouts of Sita. You killed demons such as Jambumali and Ravana's sons and stood in front of Ravana, bound by Indrajit's Brahmastra. So much hardship you have taken for my sake. How can I ever forget the service you have done for me? Now you're in this situation suffering with an injury of your tail, trying to move the If I lose you, I will be like a person lost, without eyes, feeling useless in spite of having other limbs. If you go, my life will be useless. Oh Hanuman, without eating fruits and roots, you're lying like a dead corpse. The other day you got Sanjeevani and brought Lakshmana back to life. Now you're lying down like this. You, united with me, Sita. And now if you go, who will unite me with Bharat? Hanuman wasn't responding. He was as if unconscious. And Ram fell apart emotionally, started crying. Hanuman, don't leave me. And his tears drenched the body of Hanuman, who then again came to external consciousness and grasped the lotus feet of Ram and said, once again, I've made this big offense. You've installed the Shiva Linga, and I tried to move it and place my Shiva Linga there instead. What a fool I am. What kind of servant am I? And Ram said, you've not made an offense. You were carrying out a service that I indicated. But my request now is this Shiva Linga that you brought directly from Lord Shiva, from Kailash, we should install it here, just to the north of my Shiva Linga. And anyone who wishes to worship this Shiva Linga, Ram Linga, they should first worship yours and then worship mine. And then take their bath at Dhanushkoti and everything will be nice. So Hanuman was happy. And everyone was happy. And those of you that got dried after taking your bath, you're probably happy too. The gentleman that was taking us on our little VIP tour was giving us some pep talk about the place. And he took us to the outer perimeter. I don't know if any of you went to the outer walking around. His claim was, there's no hall in the world as long as this hall. 619 feet or something like that. Yeah, the length.
One side.
Each side. And the number of columns, 1,212 columns. And it's impressive. And again, just thinking about, besides, like, that's a lot of columns, that's a lot of work. Getting all those stones from all those mountains. And once again, the same comment about a culture where worship is at the center. Now, of course,
no train or road, they took by boat.
It's devotion. Money can't buy that. Even then, money can't buy that. I mean, I'm sure there was some kind of exchange going on for people, but you can't do that without exceptional devotion. And the whole of Vedic culture. Anyway, as I already described this, it's amazing standing in those huge buildings with tall ceilings and big columns and big pieces of stone. You know, take an army of men to lift one piece of stone, and so many pieces of stone. I mean, it's mountains, plural. It's like, when we were leaving Madurai, one of the places he wanted me to see was on the right, passing by, there was a big, now a lake or a tirtha, that was just like huge place. It was just the sand that was used for building one of the temples.
Huh?
Half a mile lake. Just to get the sand. Okay. It's a big building. You need a lot of sand. You know, no trucks. You know, it's just amazing. And the stone, and the labor, and the lifting, and putting them up, and keeping them there. But people had the skill and the devotion and the strength to do these things. So I thought of spending some time for the rest of the evening describing Sita, specifically because she was the one that made, at the indication of Ram, she doesn't do anything without the indication of Ram. There was one point in the harassment, or worse, of Sita. She said to Ravana, "With my austerities, I could immediately just burn you into ashes. But I would not do anything like that without the order of Ram. And I don't think Ram would give the order to waste my austerity on an abominable personality like you." Sita was powerful. And she knew, but she was very wise in how she used that power. There's just a little bit of appreciation of Sita in terms of Sri Vaishnavism, and then Gaudiya Vaishnavism in particular. There's certainly a nice connection. Some of the acharyas of the Sri Vaishnava tradition, they appreciate, as I mentioned a little bit before, the position of Sita and Ram. The position of Vibhishan was he had no interest to enjoy Sita or to enjoy Ram, or to harm Sita or to harm Ram. His interest was serving both. But each of those who became very dear to Ram, including Vibhishan and Sugriva and everyone, their intermediary, she is the internal potency of the personality of Godhead. So one doesn't approach Ram without the mercy of Sita. Vibhishan, before he had met Ram, he was speaking to his brother Ravana the glories of Sita and the protection of Sita and the wish to have Sita restored to Ram. Sugriva, although he had not met Sita, he saw her soaring through the air when she was being carried by Ravana, and the jewels and ornaments that Sita had put in a cloth were dropped and landed on Rishimukh Mountain, and Sugriva preserved them and returned them to Ram. And one by one, each of those personalities who received mercy from Lord Ramachandra, there's some connection with Sita. They describe that when Lakshman was pleading with Ram to let him go with him into the forest in exile, he clutched Ramachandra's feet, looking up at him, but was invoking the name of Sita. So, similarly in our Gaudiya tradition, there's no question of approaching the personality of Godhead directly. We approach him through the representative, and as the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas describe, both the spiritual master and the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. One must get the mercy of Radha to get the service of Krishna. We don't approach Krishna alone. We don't approach Radha alone, or the goddess of fortune alone. We approach the two together through Radha's mercy and through the mercy of the spiritual master. So there is this embedded within the pastimes of Ramchandra, there's some underlying teachings or philosophical understandings that are nice to appreciate. Sita's characteristics are very wonderful to praise and appreciate. In one sense, they're unlimited, but there are certain outstanding characteristics. And one of the most remarkable ones comes right at the very beginning of Ramayana. When Ram is sent to the forest, he goes to inform Sita that he is going to go, see you later. And she speaks against his wishes or his instruction. Her faithfulness takes a curious direction. Her faithfulness is not born by external formality. Her faithfulness is born of her love and her internal inspiration to remain in Ram's service. So he is thinking of her welfare, that's Ram. He's only thinking of the welfare of others. And he's informing Sita, it's the hardship, you have no idea. You're used to palace life where everything is there. And in the forest there's wild animals, there's snakes, there's insects, there's temperature, there's rain, there's all kinds of physical inconveniences. Sita doesn't waver. Every day I will serve you and practice self-discipline. I too will live on fruits and nuts and will not interfere with your austerities. Taking shelter of you, O Ram, I will become fearless. By shelter, this Ram is promised, those who take shelter of him, he gives them fearlessness. O frail lady in the forest, wild beasts lurk on all sides, waiting to attack. I won't have to sleep on the bare ground with scorpions and worms and all kinds of things that ladies don't like. Abandon this idea of coming with me. If you are truly devoted to me, you will follow my instructions. And what does she say? Oh, Ram, all these hardships will seem like a blessing to me. If you protect me, I can tolerate anything. So, prevailing is, it seems like disobedience, but it's her fidelity is prevailing. She can endure anything. And to be, and then the converse is also, if I'm without you, I'll die. So please don't put me to death. Please take me with you. She's choosing wilderness over civilization, simplicity over opulence, austerity over, because she's the King Janak's daughter. She's used to palace life and everything is fabulous. It's just so she's following her conscience and her deep devotion and love for Ram. She cannot bear separation from Ram. She can endure anything with Ram's protection. Then another nice appreciation of Sita comes in relation to where she came from and where she goes to. The earth, she has this very close spirit of being so well connected with earth and the animals and the rivers Sarayu and everything. When she was carried away by Ravana, she was calling out to all the animals and the birds and the trees, please watch which direction I'm going and please inform Ram. Those are her friends. That's her natural habitat and her natural shelter and her natural affection. When she was in the forest, she was saying to Ram, one of my favorite places always was the gardens. And now this is just one big garden. It's so beautiful. See the birds and see the trees and listen to the sound of the waterfalls. Oh, Ram, let us just stay here forever. She's perfectly at home being with nature. Where does Sita get her strength? She gets her strength by fixing her mind upon Ram. Thinking of Ram, thinking of being in his service, thinking of being in his company, through that torturous, on the one hand, the external features, her body became emaciated, hardly recognizable. But matted hair and the whole thing, just horrible. But her inner strength was her fixed devotion to Ram. Now, that's Sita as the consort of Ram. But same for any one of us. If there's some inner strength, anyone ever face difficulty in their life? Where's the strength that you draw upon when you face that difficulty in your life? Once upon a time we remember, and then there's strength. And otherwise, you know, the tendency is when there's difficulty, the mind and the intelligence start to work up and how to sort out this difficulty. And forgetting Krishna is like real easy. Very, very natural. Conditioning wise, very natural. But instead, if the mind simply stays fixed upon Krishna, there's a strength, a power. And that was Sita's strength and power. Unbreakable strength. It's described in the Ramayana that because of her strength, it drained Ravan of his strength. Here's a statement found in Srimad Bhagavatam about Ravana losing his strength, being drained by Sita's strength. Shukadeva Goswami says, "Thus the soldiers of Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana's soldiers who had lost all good fortune because Ravana had been condemned by the anger of Mother Sita." When you cross, just like, you know, Akrura who had taken Krishna from Vrindavan, he got the wrath of the gopis. Don't mess with the gopis. And don't mess with Sita either. Don't mess with those who have great devotion to the Supreme Lord, because whatever it is, this demoniac principle, whatever strength acquired through austerities and any other means that may have come, like Indrajit had all these powers and so forth and so on, it's meaningless. It's all taken away. Mandodari, Ravana's wife, he's lying on the battlefield dead, and she comes out wailing at the, "Why you didn't listen? Why you just didn't give Sita back? This whole thing wouldn't have happened." O greatly fortunate one, you came under the influence of lusty desires, and therefore could not understand the influence of Mother Sita. Now, because of her curse, you have been reduced to this state, having been killed by Lord Ramachandra. So the virtues of Sita, not only she can, you know, make things with her hands very quickly, her inner character and her inner power are so glorious. When Hanuman came to inform, here's one, her quality of forgiveness. When Hanuman came to inform Sita, Ravana has been killed, the entire Rakshasa army has been destroyed, Ram would like you to come. And these Rakshasis that have been tormenting you, just give me the word, I'll finish them all right now. Because he was really angry at how they had tormented her. And Sita's reply, she said, they were simply under the order of Ravan. They were doing as they were instructed. So the instrument of wrongdoing shouldn't be blamed. Ravan is the heinous person. And besides, there's a code that all virtuous people live by. A righteous person does not consider the offenses of others. At all costs, that person always observes the vow of not returning evil for evil. For the virtuous consider good conduct their ornament. Easy to say, it's something else to do. But her forgiveness goes completely to these Rakshasi ladies. They're by nature, they're like that. They're under the order of a Rakshasa, cruel king. And she goes on to say to Hanuman, don't punish persons who are sinful. Can you find one person who has no sin, unblemished by sin? So don't punish them. Forgive them. Crowning feature of Sita. And her quality of being open-hearted. When she was on the Pushpaka Vimana, one of the places that Ramchandra stopped was Kishkinda. Because the Vanaras, who had been away from their home for so long, their wives and their children were without their association. So Sita turned to Ram and said, I would like very much if the wives of the Vanaras could also come and see Ayodhya, because they've done such wonderful service for Ram. How nice. That's a lady's thought for you. And her deep spirit of gratitude when Ram and Sita returned to Ayodhya and the coronation takes place, she turned and looked to Hanuman. And then she looked at Ram and she reached for her necklace and showed the necklace to Ram. Ram understood her mind, and Ram said, give it to Hanuman. And she took her own necklace and decorated Hanuman with her necklace. Imagine how Hanuman felt. Ram was his embrace. Sita was her necklace. As one who had such love for Ramachandra, Sita had love for one who had love for Ramachandra. the willingness to serve and do anything. It's just completely natural. But she showed that gesture of gratitude in a very sublime way. Although her... So this is Leela, but through the course of Leela, we're seeing the qualities of a great personality. She's exhibiting. It's Leela. She's the internal potency of the personality of Godhead. But through Leela, like as Ram is exhibiting the character of an ideal king, she's exhibiting the character of an ideal person attached to the ideal king. She has all high-minded qualities. So it seems very fitting that Sita is the one who created the Shiva Linga rather than Hanuman bringing the Shiva Linga, although they're both combined. It's a very nice situation. Combination. Hanuman's devotion to Ram as his servant, Sita's devotion to Ram as his eternal consort, Lakshman's affinity for Ram as his dear brother and friend, and the elder Kaushalya, and the other queens and their motherly affection. All those rasas are there in combination. Along with wonderful moral instruction. So these pastimes are very wonderful. And so just to give us the opportunity to hear about Ram's pastimes, we've come to Rameshwaram. We haven't, just concluding, we haven't been discussing these things in chronological order because of where we are. I mean, Hanuman hasn't even left for Lanka yet. We're going to go to where Hanuman leaves for Lanka. We're already talking about him coming back after the battle. So, but that's okay. The chronological sequence is not essential. The transcendental understanding, sentiment, lessons, emotions, there to be appreciated.